DW Spotlight on Europe.
Hello and a warm welcome to Spotlight on Europe with me, Assumpta Latus, in Bonn, Germany. Coming up on the program this week, the Italian budget and the growing rift between Italy and the EU.
This budget carries risks for Italy's economy, for its companies, for its savers, and for its taxpayers. The European Commission is therefore taking its legal and political responsibilities today in the interest of the citizens of Italy and of the euro area as a whole.
Also on the program, the Alternative for Germany, or AFD, introduces a controversial online platform for kids.
The idea that children, including my own, are being encouraged to snitch on teachers who don't applaud the xenophobic, sexist and environmentally unfriendly ideals of the AFD is as absurd as it is desperate.
Those stories and more right here on Spotlight on Europe. But first, the EU's top diplomat, Federica Mogherini, has called for a transparent and credible investigation into the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. She was speaking in Ankara after meeting with Turkish government officials. Helen Sini has the details and this roundup of European news.
The EU's foreign affairs chief, Federica Mogherini, said all those responsible for Jamal Khashoggi's death had to be held accountable. The journalist was murdered in Saudi Arabia's consulate in Istanbul in October. The Saudi government says 21 people are in custody for the killing, and Riyadh is seeking the death penalty for five of the suspects. Mogherini, though, said she was against any application of the death penalty. On Thursday, Turkey's Hürriyet newspaper reported that the CIA had a recording of a phone call in which the Saudi Crown Prince, Mohammed bin Salman, gave instructions to silence Khashoggi. Poland's governing party has proposed draft legislation that would reverse a disputed judicial retirement law. In doing so, it's bowed to a ruling from the EU's top court. The European Court of Justice had ordered Warsaw to suspend its decision to lower the retirement age of Supreme Court judges from 70 to 65. That law required more than a third of current Supreme Court judges to step down, raising fears of a threat to judicial independence. Poland's ruling Law and Justice Party has now presented a revised law in Parliament which changes the legal status of judges who were forced into retirement, allowing them to return to the bench. A British academic has been sentenced to life in prison in the United Arab Emirates on charges of spying. The public prosecutor in Abu Dhabi said 31-year-old Matthew Hedges had confessed to the charges in court, but that he could appeal. The hearing lasted less than 5 minutes, and Hedges' lawyer was not present. Hedges, a PhD student, was arrested at Dubai International Airport in May. He was researching the UAE's foreign and internal policies after the Arab Spring revolutions of 2011. According to his family, the evidence against him consisted of research notes. The British government said it had seen no evidence to back up the spying charges against him and was raising his case at the highest levels of the UAE government. Italy has moved to impound a migrant rescue ship operating in the Mediterranean. Prosecutors want the vessel, the Aquarius, seized for alleged anomalies in its disposal of onboard waste. They say they've documented the illegal disposal of thousands of kilos of waste, including clothing worn by migrants with contagious diseases such as scabies, as well as blood-stained bandages and other medical waste. The ship's crew was accused of dumping the waste material while docked at Italian ports. By doing so, the ship avoided paying €460,000 of waste disposal costs. The ship's operators say the move is aimed at further criminalising their humanitarian action in the Mediterranean. Kosovo has increased tariffs on goods from Serbia from 10% to 100%. The move came after the country failed in its bid to join Interpol on Tuesday. The government blames Serbia for blocking its accession to the International Police Organization, and it said it would be taking further measures. Kosovo declared independence from Serbia in 2008, but the countries remain at odds. The Serbian government said the increase in tariffs would have a disastrous impact across the entire region. A German teenager has managed to gain and lose his driving license in less than 1 hour. Police caught the 18-year-old speeding near the city of Dortmund. He was going 95 kilometres an hour in a 50 zone. When police pulled the vehicle over, they found the driver and four of his friends apparently going for a bit of a spin to celebrate the teenager passing his driving test just 49 minutes previously. He'll have to pay a €200 fine and cover the costs of additional driving lessons. He's also barred for driving for at least 4 weeks. A case perhaps of easy come, easy go.
Helen Zini with that roundup of European news. Let's go to Italy now, where a rift between the country and the European Union has widened. Brussels has rejected Italy's national budget plan and begun disciplinary procedures against the country. DW business editor Andreas Becker spoke with my colleague Keith Walker and started by explaining why Italy is guilty of serious non-compliance.
That's because the 3% ceiling is just one of many rules. Another says the total public debt must not be higher than 60% of gross domestic product. Italy's is double than that, 130%. And in cases such as this, countries have to show they are trying to improve the situation. That's why the previous Italian government promised they would go with a budget deficit of 0.8%. The new government doesn't feel bound by these promises and says we spent more.
Okay, why do the new government want to raise this deficit? What's the reason for that?
Well, in short, the new populist government wants to keep the promises that got them elected. For example, tax cuts, higher pension benefits, early retirement plans, higher welfare payments. There are two problems with that. One is to finance all that, a deficit would probably be even higher than the 2.4% they envision. And most experts agree that these measures will not bring economic growth to Italy, which is what Italy needs most. Let's hear what Pierre Moscovici, the European Commissioner for Economic and Financial Affairs, has to say to that.
This budget carries risks for Italy's economy, for its companies, for its savers, and for its taxpayers. The European Commission is therefore taking its legal and political responsibilities today in the interest of the citizens of Italy and of the euro area as a whole.
Okay, so pretty serious words there. So what does Italy need to do to address the situation? And what could happen if they don't address it?
Well, from the point of the EU, Italy should spend less or spend differently. But my feeling, and that of experts I've talked to, is that the current Italian government is rather enjoying the standoff with the EU because they have a lot to gain from that politically. It's a chance for populists to prove their point. We fight for ordinary citizens, but the bad EU won't let us. So some people say that this might even last until the European election in May, from which the Lega Nord hopes to win. The EU has refused the budget proposal and is now set to start a formal procedure called the excessive debt proceeding. And in theory, this could lead to sanctions against Rome to the tune of billions of euros.
And can they afford to pay such a huge fine?
Well, it's unlikely this fine will ever be imposed, because the real threat to the Italian economy is not the fine. It is more the financial markets and the so-called bond spreads. In other words, investors simply demand higher interest rates when they lend money to Italy, and refinancing becomes more expensive. Ultimately, Rome has no room for maneuver. So the likely outcome could be that Italy will stick with the 2.4% of the deficit, but spend the money differently. Mm-hmm. For example, not on fulfilling campaign pledges, but on things that might bring growth, such as infrastructure and education.
DW's business editor Andreas Becker talking to my colleague Keith Walker. And now, a controversial online platform has been set up by the far-right Alternative for Germany AfD party. It is a place where students and their parents can go to report teachers who speak ill of their politics. Last month, Berlin joined the ranks of other states, including Hamburg in the north and Baden-Württemberg in the south, where the portal has been launched. It's been widely criticized as a tool of totalitarianism, but the AfD says it's already received thousands of reports through the platform. Tamsin Walker sent this postcard from Berlin with her thoughts.
It's a believably unbelievable next step from a party whose members have decried Berlin's Holocaust memorial as a monument of shame, described the Nazi era as a drop of bird poo on German history, and which has campaigned using slogans such as "New Germans, we can make our own," and "Islam has no place in the German kitchen." Yet even so, the AfD's introduction of a so-called platform for neutral schools online knocked me for six. The idea that children, including my own, are being encouraged to snitch on teachers who don't applaud the xenophobic, sexist, and environmentally unfriendly ideals of the AfD is as absurd as it is desperate. But it's also frightening. Not only because it demonstrates a flagrant disregard for recent history and hardens divisions in a society that would be better served by greater tolerance, but because despite the party's claims to the contrary, the platform aims to stifle debate. Established, so goes the party line, to promote freedom of opinion and prevent violation of the 1976 Beutelsbacher Konsens, or Beutelsbach Consensus, under which teachers are forbidden from politically indoctrinating their students, the platform actually seeks to normalize an acceptance of the AfD's nationalist agenda. And we know how that can end.
It's a big problem when Schüler Lehrer denunzieren, yeah?
Besides, there's a big difference between indoctrination and illustration of the facts. And in an age where lying goes unpunished and so many young people are relying on superficial, if not downright false, social media posts as a leading source of information, it's imperative to equip the current school generation with the tools for critical thinking and analysis.
So richtig, finde ich, aber wir Lehrer die Pflicht und das Recht dazu haben, vor extremistischen Positionen.
Michael Kaditz, who teaches at a high school in the eastern part of Berlin, believes he and his colleagues have both a right and a duty to warn against extremism and to explain it to students. Although he's in what he describes as the fortunate position of teaching kids who generally reject AfD ideals as something very alien, he's experienced other schools where a lack of tolerance would make it harder for teachers to speak out about what the AfD stands for. In the weeks following the platform launch in Berlin, the AfD says it received around 5,000 complaints. How many were in response to calls to bombard the site with hoax messages and take out pizza orders, or from teachers publicly insisting that their names be added to the list, the party naturally didn't say. Only that all but 10 were not serious enough to warrant further intervention, such as speaking to the teacher involved. But it also says it expects the complaints to keep on coming.
aber ab und zu mal merke ich das schon, wenn wir jetzt mal ein politisches Thema haben.
We'll see how that pans out, to what extent Berlin students and their parents back this scheme, which it is in more ways than one, and whether it ultimately goes down as an absurdity, an act of desperation, or the start of teachers who no longer feel comfortable speaking their minds. These days, that kind of impossible feels horribly possible. But I have faith in Berlin to do the right thing.
It's einfach, also am Ende ist es einfach nur Petzen. Also ich verstehe nicht, warum man überhaupt so ein Portal machen würde.
13-year-old student Maximilian Penke, who enjoys a good political debate at school and at home, summed it up when he said the platform really is just designed to encourage snitching. And if a teacher says something about the AfD, so be it. Others ought to be able to live with it, because not everybody likes the AfD. Hear, hear.
Tamsin Walker with that postcard from Berlin. And you're listening to Spotlight on Europe, coming to you from Bonn, Germany.
A man walks down the street. He says, why am I soft in the middle now? Why am I soft in the middle? The rest of my life is so hard. I need a photo opportunity. I want a shot of redemption. Don't want to end up a cartoon in a cartoon graveyard. Bone digger, bone digger, dogs in the moonlight. Far away, my well-lit door. Mr. Beer belly, get these mutts away from me, you know. I don't find this stuff amusing anymore. If you'll be my bodyguard, I can be your long lost pal. I can call you Betty, Betty, when you call me, you can call me Al. A man walks down the street, he says, why am I short of attention? Got a short little span of attention, and all my nights are so long. Where's my wife and family? What if I die here? Who'll be my role model? Now that my role model is gone, gone. He ducked back down the alley with some roly-poly little bat-faced girl. All along, along, there were incidents and accidents. There were hints and allegations. If you'll be my bodyguard, I can be your long-lost pal. I can call you Betty, and Betty when you call me.
Hungary's Viktor Orbán is well known for his headline opposition on immigration and his refusal to accept refugees. But he has just granted asylum to the former Prime Minister of Macedonia, Nikola Gruevski. He fled his home country just before he was due to start a 2-year prison term for corruption. DW's Hungary correspondent Stefan Boss spoke with my colleague Keith Walker, who started by asking what the former PM has been accused of.
Well, the 48-year-old Nikola Gruevski, the former Macedonian Prime Minister, has been accused of influencing government officials to purchase a very expensive luxury car for about €600,000 or so. And that was just one of the corruption charges they could prove so far. That carries a 2-year prison sentence in Macedonia. And of course, the former prime minister wasn't really happy with that. And that's why he decided to flee to Hungary. And he has also called it a political witch hunt, basically. He has said in a statement that the courts and the prosecutor's office have been turned into an instrument of political blackmail and calculated attacks against political opponents. And he also says that today in Macedonia there are conditions of government repression, discrimination, persecution, and politically motivated arrests and full control by the government. That is, of course, his opinion, but prosecutors see it differently. Of course.
So Gruevski says he's a victim of political persecution. What's Macedonia saying about their former prime minister escaping to Hungary?
Macedonia is very angry about it, and they say that he is a corrupt politician. During his time as prime minister from 2006 to 2016, he was, according to the authorities, involved in several corruption cases, even a wiretapping scandal that involved the illegal wiretapping of some 20,000 people, including opposition politicians and journalists. And what is very interesting, that they have also detained a cousin of the prime minister, the former prime minister, who used to be the Macedonian intelligence chief, for his role in that wiretapping scandal, because they fear he might flee as well, perhaps also to Hungary. So Macedonia is angry about it all, and they also have already demanded the extradition of Nikola Kruevski. They find it ridiculous that Hungary has given him asylum.
Is that going to happen? Is he going to be extradited? Because, I mean, him and Viktor Orban, they're good friends, aren't they?
Yes, indeed. Indeed, that's a very good point. Kruevski is a very close ally of Hungary's right-wing Prime Minister Viktor Orban. And that has also already led to questions in Parliament. Several opposition parliamentarians now say that the speedy asylum procedure totally contrasts the Hungarian government's policies towards many other asylum seekers, among them, for instance, families fleeing war, persecution and poverty. They have been locked up in border container camps, in some cases even without food for long periods of time, yeah, and so on. So, you know, they say, how is it possible that he gets asylum so fast and while others, you know, have to wait so long?
And as well as that, Kruevski is fleeing from justice. He's not fleeing from war or
yes,
poverty.
Indeed,
it's a huge political crisis in the country. What's going to happen next?
What I think is that we will see definitely more pressure on the Hungarian government to extradite him. I think not least from the European Union. I think there's also concern about the situation. And of course, Macedonia will put up the pressure on Hungary. I think Prime Minister Viktor Orban can expect a rocky road ahead.
DW's Hungary correspondent Stefan Bose talking to my colleague Keith Walker. Eating meat or any animal products at all has never had such bad press as it has today. The ranks of vegetarians and vegans are growing fast, but growing even faster still are the flexitarians. These are people who like meat but are just trying to eat less of it. It is with this market in mind that McDonald's has launched the Mac Vegan Burger in Finland and Sweden. John Lorentzon travelled to the Swedish city of Malmö, where the Mac Vegan was created and is made, to give it a go.
It almost looks like a meat burger.
It does, doesn't it?
In a shiny chrome-coloured research kitchen a few metres from the Baltic Sea, Carl Johan Freelander fries up a veggie burger he's been working on.
This is made out of soy protein. The soy protein is sort of our meat, you could say.
Freelander is a product developer for a food company called Orkla. You might think a McVegan burger would make an alright comedy sketch, so far removed the ethical and health concerns of vegans might seem from those of fast food multinationals. But those ethical and health concerns are increasingly big business. Veggie burgers from McDonald's, Burger King and so on have been around for ages, in Germany for example. But they targeted vegetarians who don't like meat. The fastest growing market is meat eaters who just don't want to eat so much meat. Challenged, for example, by independent American burger chains like Wahlburgers that sell the apparently very convincing Impossible Burger, McDonald's got Freelander and his team to come up with a riposte.
When you have meat as a base, the meat itself has a taste. When it comes to soy protein and the little taste it has, it's not a very pleasant taste, to be honest. And we have to add peppers and onions and stuff that makes it taste good. We actually use tomato powder as well, because tomato has like a natural umami feel to it. Umami, it's what you often call the fifth flavor. It's the flavor of savory, you often say.
Uh-huh.
You often say that mushroom has a lot of umami flavor as well. So you could actually use a little bit of mushroom powder without the actual product tasting like mushroom, but you still get that savory feel to it.
Here we go. The new burger. Half for you, half for me. Thank you. It's actually quite convincingly meaty, isn't it? Very savoury.
You think so?
Yeah.
Yeah, great.
A lot of pepper.
A lot of pepper, yeah. But you know, when the bun comes to it,
mm-hmm.
and you have the sauces on top of it, you won't feel the pepper as much. So uh-huh. you have to be a little...
I like the pepper.
Yeah?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, there's that savoury taste which, you know, if this is a soup, you get it by putting a lot of stock in.
Yeah.
How is this different from the McDonald's burger that you developed?
The one for McDonald's is a little more neutral, because mm-hmm. they want to be able to work with this burger in a lot of different settings, so they can change it up with different dressings, vegetables and mm-hmm. so on.
Frilander is one of the 1 million of Sweden's 10 million citizens who are vegetarian. But there are also many people eating less meat and more vegetarian meals. Orkla's meat substitutes, for example, whose sales rose 46% last year and 66% in the first 6 months of this year. McDonald's declined the offer of an interview and told us that in any case, they don't communicate sales figures. Unperturbed, we went down to a Malmö McDonald's to give it a whirl. Placing my order, I forget that milkshakes are not, if you want to be doctrinaire about it, entirely vegan. But that's okay, because I'm one of the new and beautiful people that are the flexi-vegans. We don't eat any animal products at all, except when we do. Next to me, while I wait for them to put all that into the appropriate packaging, there's a dad with a child who's having a fit. And guess what they order? A happy meal for the kid, of course. You never know, it might do the trick. And a McVegan. The dad is called Dan Morsasavi, and the McVegan, he's loving it.
I think it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's close to the meat one.
So you've actually switched over?
Yeah. 15 years ago, but I remember.
Okay. So 15 years ago you became a vegetarian?
Yes.
And so when they introduced this just a few months ago, you started eating McDonald's again?
Yes.
Yeah.
So they got me back.
All right. Okay. Do you think there's a lot of people like you in Sweden?
Yeah, I think it's an increased need for plant-based foods. And yeah. people enjoy it and see there's ways to switch without yeah. giving up too much. Some people say, why eat vegetarian food if it's like the meat? But there's nothing wrong to eat meat. I just don't want to eat animals, so this is perfect.
It's all right.
So I sit down and get my McVegan out of its yellow and green box. It looks like a normal burger, perhaps slightly redder, that tomato powder of Carl Johan's possibly, with the usual McDonald's lettuce and tomatoes and gherkins and stuff. See, the texture is quite meaty. It's quite sort of juicy and, how would you say, a little bit sort of crispy on the surface and a bit juicy. But it doesn't really have the sort of strong meat taste. And what does Mrs. Lawrence think, who is accompanying me on this assignment?
Qu'est-ce que t'en penses, toi?
C'est très de ce genre.
No. Ouais.
C'est pas très satisfaisant.
Ah.
It's very soyery, she says, not very satisfying. So there you go, a bit of a thumbs down for Mrs. L, who definitely has better taste than I do when it comes to food. If you want my opinion, though, I would say that the McVegan is probably good enough. And I predict it will be available around the world in the near future. John Lawrenson, DW, Malmö, Sweden.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of Spotlight on Europe. Till next week, I'm Assunta Latus. Thank you for listening.